Hey everyone, welcome to another week of Broadway Breakdown. We're starting off our Halloween month, and I know we all already had an October show, but we're starting off the scary stuff today with Little Shop of Horrors Broadway show. Don't go away.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies.
And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Broadway Breakdown.
I love this song.
Hey everyone, welcome to Broadway Breakdown. This week we are discussing, of course, Little Shop of Horrors, the classic. Most people know the movie,
yeah,
but it is a show as well. I am your host, Brianna Phipps. You can find me everywhere at bphipps14 and on Snapchat at bphipps1214. And I'm joined by Audrey over here.
123 Jackie B on all platforms, except for Snapchat, where I am JackieB123.
All right. So we are going to start off our show in just a second, but of course we have to talk about our Broadway news first. And that is always brought to us by Robert Diamond and BroadwayWorld.com. Our first bit of news is that American Idiot is going to be adapted into an HBO film, and it's going to star Billy Joe Armstrong.
I'm so excited because I never got to see American Idiot when it was a touring production, so I'm excited to see it as a movie, especially since it's starring Billy Joe Armstrong.
Yeah, and he's going to reprise the role of St. Jimmy. It's unclear. They don't know if they're going to put it on HBO, if they're going to run it in theaters as an HBO. I feel like if it's an HBO film, it should just be on HBO.
I feel like that too, because I have HBO now, so I'm biased.
So you don't have to pay for it.
I'm biased. I don't want to pay. Well, I mean, it's like, there are so many platforms today. If I can pay less for something, I would appreciate that.
Also, they had that documentary, I believe it was on HBO, about the musical. So I think it would make sense to have it on HBO because it would kind of just work off of that. But yeah, I mean, it's very early stages right now. They don't have a whole lot. It's just being kind of rewritten at the moment for a filmed version. So we'll see what happens with that. And then it was just announced Carmen Cusack, Zachary Levi, and more are going to sign on for Sunday in the Park with George.
Jake Gyllenhaal.
That's going to be starring Jake Gyllenhaal at City Center, and that's going to be the 24th of this month through the 26th.
You know what's interesting is that venue is the same venue that did the Encores performance of Little Shop of Horrors, where Jake Gyllenhaal played Seymour.
Yeah.
If you want to find it online, and again, I'll tweet it from our Twitter after today, but he does a really good job. I had no idea Jake Gyllenhaal could sing.
The only thing I wanted was for him to shave the beard off before it, because it made him too masculine for Seymour for me. And our last bit of news is Sean Montgomery, Jeremy Benton, and more will lead White Christmas National Tour, and the tour is going to begin in Bloomington, Indiana. During the 2016 holiday season, so this year. I'm really excited for this because I love the movie, so I'm excited to see
I love the movie too, so that sounds like it would be really fun.
Plus, I love that they're starting it off at Christmas time. Like,
yeah.
You know how, because you know sometimes, like, what did I just read? Hocus Pocus, the movie, came out in July.
Oh, yeah.
So, they do that. Like,
you know, we have something here in L.A. called Rockwell Table and Stage. It's actually expanding out to other areas. So they have a show that's going on, a Baz Luhrmann show in Vegas right now. But hopefully it'll expand to different areas as well. But they're doing an unauthorized Hocus Pocus show that they kind of write, and then they insert songs that kind of match the storyline. And one of the things they said was they were like a Christmas movie that came out in July. Or a Halloween movie that came out in July.
And I actually do have one more piece of news that was asked of me by Tiana, who joined us recently for Newsies, to spread. It was also from BroadwayWorld.com. But Prospect Theater is going to present Take On Me musical next weekend. It's the 14th and 15th. And let me see. This is at the Prospect Theater, like I said. It's going to be set in the 1950s New Orleans in this musical revue featuring four couples struggling with the highs and lows of love, all told with 80s pop hit. The four couples promise a swinging good time all night long.
That sounds wonderful. Is Tiana in the production? Is that how
she... No, I think it was her brother's... Someone her brother knows wrote the show.
Wow.
So she wanted me to spread the word
about
it.
That's exciting.
So go check that out next weekend.
Let us
know what it's like.
I have other news that... Because you guys are probably all Hamilton fans, you know, but Lin-Manuel Miranda was on Saturday Night Live, and he gave one of the best host opening monologues that I've ever seen on SNL. And I'm a longtime SNL fan, so that's saying something.
And that was our news from BroadwayWorld.com. Thank you, Robert Diamond and Broadway World, for that.
Yes.
Also, guys, I forgot to mention before, Alexis isn't joining us today, but we do have sub-engineer and musical lover Mark in the booth with us today.
Hello, Brianna. Hello, everybody.
And where can they find you, Mark?
You can find me on Twitter at Mark B. Donica.
And Mark, like me, is a fan of the movie. I grew up watching the movie. There's a large gap of time from when the movie was released to when they started doing the actual like Broadway production of this show. It was like, the movie was 1986, and the Broadway production, the actual like Broadway production, because it started off Broadway in the 80s, was in 2003. So most people, I assume, saw the movie first.
Yes, most likely.
But we'll be doing that next week.
It actually started off as a film in like the 60s.
A non-singing film.
And then it was translated into a musical, like she said, and then to a movie. But the musical never made it to Broadway. And then there's been so much stuff with this, and I'm going to go into a little bit later. But yeah,
but Alan Menken wrote it.
But Alan Menken wrote the music. It has an amazing, amazing score, this like great doo-wop feel, which is just...
Love it.
If it doesn't get stuck in your head, like, you're not listening to it right. I don't know what you're doing.
I love that whole like B-movie cult classic vibe. It's totally set up for that. And I love cult classics and B-movies.
Well, let's get right into it, because I want to talk a little bit about the characters, because, I mean, the characters are what make the show, since it is such a small cast.
Yes.
The show, I think, comprises of, what, 3, 4, 7 people?
Maybe. Yes, and then, I mean, it depends on, you know, some of the touring casts have had a couple extra people to be, like, background dancing hobos and whatnot.
But basically 7 people.
Yes.
We have the 3, like, street urchin girls.
Yeah, which Chiffon, I call the Supremes. Crystal, and Ronette, which, yes.
I call them the Supremes. And we have, of course, Seymour, and we have Mr. Mushnick. We have the dentist, Oren. And we have, of course, Audrey, and Audrey too.
I always wanted, when I was younger, because I was so obsessed with the movie, and then tons of local people do, what's the word I'm looking for? Community theater. Whoa. Community theater does these shows a lot, so I've seen it as a community theater play, but that's neither here nor there. I don't know why I just said that. I always wanted to get a Venus flytrap and name it Audrey too, because
I was scared to death for the longest time, because I saw this. I don't know if I was allowed to or not, because I can't remember what the movie rating was, but I saw it as a child at a slumber party, and I was so scared of this plant that I saw Venus flytraps, and I thought that that's what they were going to do.
Aww.
Like, I thought that they were going to try to eat me or, like, bite my finger off. So this movie definitely made me scared of those. Sorry. Something caught in my throat. But what I was saying with the characters is, because I listened to the original off-Broadway cast, and to me at least, the new cast, the revival cast with Hunter Foster, is just so much more into their characters, and their characters are so much more heightened.
I don't know. I love Ellen Green, who was in the original.
Yeah, no, I love Ellen Green too, but I'm not talking even about her character as much, because that one is kind of already big in the original. I'm talking about more like... the guy who played Seymour in the original, like, when he sang, it was kind of strong for me. And, like, I love that Hunter Foster brought the nerdiness into the singing, too. And the dentist, I think Sean Mills is his name in the revival. He just is, in my opinion, the best dentist.
I don't know. You know what's funny is I watched online, you can see all kinds of clips of the Encore's performance. And Taryn Killam, who I will admit is already one of my faves. I said I'm a longtime SNL fan. he played the dentist in that one. And it just, I don't know, it brought the dentist to a whole nother, not that I already didn't like the dentist, but it brought it to a whole nother level for me.
Well, the dentist for me in this show kind of, if you do it right, steals the show.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
If you do it wrong.
It's totally like one of those Johnny Depp kind of scene-stealing characters that is very memorable.
Which is why it worked so well when Steve Martin did it, because he's so great with character roles, and we'll get into that next week. But I don't know, like, when you listen to the original, like, I don't know, for me at least, the dentist just was not anything in this one. He was so heightened. And then the dentist also, if you guys didn't know, he plays, towards the end of the show, these 3 different characters that are trying to, like, get Seymour to sign up with them for different things. In Lifetime magazine, we have a studio, someone trying to sell a TV show, and someone trying to, I don't take clippings. There's a bunch of different people. But he plays all those parts. And, like, in the original, he just has the same voice for all of those. And then the revival, like, he does his own thing with it, which I really appreciate. I like when people, like...
Yeah, make distinctions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, like, it just brings the comedy to it so much more. They also have this kind of thing with it where we have, like, Mr. Mushnick and we have the dentist, too. And my thoughts are kind of, like, terrible people. Like, the dentist is obviously a terrible piece, but I think Mr. Mushnick's kind of a terrible person, too. I don't know what your thoughts on that are.
It's hard because part of me is watching it from the level of, like, it's a circumstantial thing. Like, this guy's, like, store is falling apart, and he does have love for Seymour, who he kind of, like, adopted. But then I think things go wrong, just, like, it's showing, like, how things go wrong when they become greedy and when they become famous.
I mean, but the only reason he adopted him was because he was going to leave. He thought in his head, like, oh, he might, because he said that to the dentist, and he's like, oh, he might try to leave me. I need to, like, secure this down so that I don't lose my money and my fame.
But, I mean, why would he have him there the whole time beforehand?
Who else is going to work for him when you make no money?
I know, I guess.
I don't know. I don't see any redeeming quality in Mr. Mushnick. Like, except for the Audrey part. Okay, he does try to get Audrey to leave the dentist.
Yeah, he keeps telling her.
Towards Audrey, he's a nice person, but he's not to Seymour at me at all. But, like, I don't know. You have these characters that you're so sympathetic towards, and you have these characters in the show that you're so unsympathetic towards. And there's kind of, like, no middle ground for me, at least.
I don't know. I mean, I think on certain levels, like, some of the three Supremes, as you call them, I think they are ones that you can be sympathetic or non-sympathetic to, depending on the situation. Because they're kind of, like, they work as these, like, casual observers, but then sometimes they work, like, into the scenes.
Yeah, I guess for me, it just, I didn't have any, like, I liked hearing them, but, like emotionally there was no connection to them because they were just the storytellers of the show for me. There was no...
I do like, though, how in the play, their characters have more of a through line than they do
in the
movie.
They didn't in the original play.
Oh, really?
In the original play, they weren't as backup in as many songs, which I do like that they brought into the revival, that they had them there, because it just gave them more to do for one, and they have great parts to it, and they have amazing voices.
Yeah,
so
they have, it's just, like, it makes more sense to me to have them be kind of, like, this cohesive through line, like they do in the revival, which... I guess is that the production I saw must have been based on the revival.
Mm-hmm. It's possible. And then we have this great music, like you said, Alan Menken wrote it, which just kind of brings together everything, because we have these ridiculous songs like Dentist and The Laughing Gas and Mushnick and Son. And then we have belty songs like Suddenly Seymour and Downtown. Skid Row, sorry.
But they're all so funny. Even, like, her song about how she's, like, dreaming of a place to be. Like, even that song's funny because you're, like, your dream kind of sucks, but you do live on Skid Row, so I guess that's why your dream sucks. So I don't know. I love... it's such an Alan Menken thing to have these kind of, like, darkly humorous numbers, which... if you have not seen Gallivant, that's how Gallivant is.
It's an amazing, amazing show that unfortunately
and I did the
only
after
got
show
two
for
seasons.
It. Yes.
Unfortunately. And they make fun of that they even got a second season. That's a little... I think it's all on Netflix now. Go watch it on Netflix.
And then watch the after show that I'm on.
We do have someone in the chat role, Armando. Sorry, these glasses are not mine. They're my boyfriend's. He said he played Audrey too in high school.
Aww.
I imagine it would be such a fun part to play.
Yeah, and I mean, when you think about it, it's like, I know the voice actor is probably not actually inside.
He's not. He's off stage.
Inside the puppet. But when you think about Seymour, for some of those parts, he has to, like, be he has to be Audrey too with his hand. So there's a lot of, like, I think there's a lot of, like, extra acting going on that, you know, is pretty impressive to me. To be able to do, like, puppetry and singing at the same time, like in Avenue Q.
I believe how it's done, and you can say how you guys did it at your school, Amanda, if you want to, but for the tour and for Broadway, they had the actor. He's also the hobo in the beginning that says, then you go. Mm-hmm. But then from then on, he's off stage with a microphone and they have a puppeteer inside the big puppet. He doesn't sit in there.
Yeah. I think that'd be too much to do. You couldn't sing from inside a puppet and act with those thingy things.
Yeah, it'd be too much. we also have... Sorry, with the puppet. Sorry. I don't know what's going on with my voice today. Like you said, like Seymour's part of it. I believe there are four puppets. We have the very little one that I think Seymour controls with like a finger.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you have a bigger one that he controls, like he puts his, I believe, arm up into the little thing and then
it's like holding it. Yeah.
And then you have the like bigger one that's now a puppeteer, but can't fit a person inside of it yet. And then you have the gigantic one that eats people. And also, I think we posted on our Facebook, if you want to see what the puppet looks like, because they do an amazing job. I think Jim Henson did the puppet.
His company, not him personally. His company, yeah. But yeah.
Because he was already dead by this point, unfortunately. Yes. But we have the Macy's Day Parade from that year, where they do a little scene kind of medley from the show, and they have the puppet in the background. So you can kind of see how it moves and how cool they...
It's really impressive considering like a lot of the versions I watched online were from the UK tour and the puppets there. You were like, oh no.
They were cool if you had never seen the other puppet.
Yeah.
But if you've seen the other puppet, yeah. It's just like I told Jackie this before, without the puppet being so versatile and being able to move so well and like have this much personality, like I think you lose most of the play.
Well, a lot of it's the voice of the puppet too. No, I think it is. Like the, you know, even if the puppet looks kind of like wah wah, as long as you have a really good voice actor doing the puppet's voice, it's really,
you have to have
really
a good compelling. Voice actor, and you have to have a good puppeteer that can stay on with the talking with somebody else that's not even near them,
right,
moving its lips with the way that the guy's talking.
I mean, every production I've seen on YouTube, production I saw live, you always have to cast somebody who has a really like cool, distinctive voice to make it and really a great appealing.
Laugh. You have to have that. You have to be able to do that big booming evil laugh. If you can't do that, I'm sorry, you can't play Audrey too.
I mean, it's like any villain. You don't like if the villain's boring, you kind of like everything falls apart.
Mm-hmm. And also, if you don't have, like, and it happens, if you watch the UK one, I think, a little bit, the death scenes aren't as quite as compelling, because the plant has to, like, come down in that one to be able to put the person in. This one has so much movement that you feel, I get more scared for the characters in the show.
Right.
So I think, I don't know, overall, if you're going to do the show... Make sure
invest
in a good puppet. Make your own costumes.
I did read somewhere online though that like I forget somebody had posted or like you can request like the actual like blueprints. I don't know what you call them, but like the documents that show you how to make the puppets.
Oh, so that's cool.
Yeah.
Amanda said it was fun and hard, and they had to rehearse for weeks to get the lip sync right, I imagine. Yeah. I imagine you would have to work really hard with you. You'd have to be very in sync with your partner.
Right.
I've seen versions of the show where Audrey is actually dressed in a suit and is on stage as a physical presence while the plant itself is still in the background, but in order to sort of properly emote and sing, they have a presence on stage in a similarly colored full suit.
Oh, that's interesting. I like that.
I think I did see, I didn't watch the clip, but I think I saw a clip on YouTube of what you're talking about. So this is going to bring me to my next section. Actually, before I do it, let's do our diva song.
Suddenly Seymour
for me too.
I mean, it's the true diva number of the whole production. And I mean,
plus when you get to like belt as Audrey, like there's nothing better.
I will admit that I am an Ellen Green who originated the role, who was in the movie. I love her voice. If you haven't seen Pushing Daisies, she sings on Pushing Daisies too. I am just like such a huge fan of hers. Such a huge fan. And if you
Pushing Daisies is another one.
Oh my gosh. It has Cheno in it. It has...
It's amazing. Mark, do you have a diva song? And for those of you that don't know, our diva song is basically just the song that you love to sing the most from the show. The song that you're in your car blasting at the top of your lungs.
I'd have to think about it.
Okay, think about it.
We'll let you think about it and then get back to us. Yes.
We do have someone in the chat. Samantha is back with us, and she said that there is a whole Tumblr dedicated to low-budget Audrey 2s.
Oh, my gosh. And this is amazing. You just opened up my world. Yes.
We're definitely going to be going home and checking those out and probably posting some on our Facebook page of our favorites.
It's happening.
All right, so let's go into this portion that I wanted to talk about. In my mind, this play doesn't get the credit that I think it deserves. I think people, like, from a, like, professional standpoint.
I think that happens with most, like, cult classic kind of B-movie things. And I do think also that if this musical hadn't come out in the 80s, and if it had come out today, I think more people would kind of, like, give it that.
But, I mean, it came out in 2003. I mean, that's when it really, like...
But even in 2003, I feel like it really also depends on the era we're in. I mean, we're in a, like, Hamilton, Book of Mormon, post-Avenue Q, like, all these things that, in your mind, like, I mean, having something like Avenue Q or Book of Mormon on Broadway, like, having those be a big success, I would see, like, now Little Shop of Horrors, if it had a revival, be a big success. I think it's part of the people not getting it.
I would love if they did a new revival. I would love to see what they would do with it now.
Yes. Yes. And then I think part of it is, like any cult classic, it's people just, like, not getting it.
Yeah.
And I do think, like, when we're talking about the 80s, where it's, like, off-Broadway and off-Broadway and never making it to Broadway until 2003, I think in the 80s it's, like, the 80s are such a weird time because everyone was trying to be cool, and the stuff that was cool now, like, when you look back at it, you're like, that was really, really not cool. Like, when you look back at, like, Captain EO, you're like, that's so B-movie, terrible budget, but, like, we thought it was so cool at the time.
Still the coolest thing ever. Thank you very much.
I did think it was cool in the 80s, but when I went to Disney and saw Captain EO again as an adult, I was like, what was I thinking?
Yeah, still the coolest thing ever,
right? I mean, I wish, I couldn't find any clips, but I wanted to see what the original, like, I wanted to see what the plant looked like in the original version and everything compared to today. For those of you, Mark just posted in our chat world the Tumblr, so if you want to check that out,
yes,
go look at it.
Tell us what
find your favorite plant and tweet it at us. Find your favorite low budget one and tweet to us.
Oh yes.
What I was talking about with it not getting the credit deserved is, like, you know, and it, with it being a cult classic now, is because the original didn't get to Broadway, because I did some research, and I guess, like, they originally, when they were doing the 2003 revival of it, were putting together a cast, and only Hunter Foster was the only person that was kept. Alice Ripley was going to be the original Audrey, and then they fired everybody except for Hunter Foster. I mean, it just seems like this whole show has gone through so much where it's been, like, held back so much. So
I do also think that, like, when you have a production that's kind of, like, poking fun at the whole, like, B-movie, crazy sci-fi, like, Attack of the Killer Tomatoes kind of thing, you have to have people get that kind of tongue-in-cheek humor.
Yeah, that's true.
And if you don't, if you cast actors, and this is one of my problems with the 2003 Audrey, is, like, she was playing it so straight to me, and she has a beautiful voice, but she was playing it so straight that I was like, I don't know. It just felt like she didn't get that whole, like, tongue-in-cheek humor. And you really have to get that, and you have to cast the right people who get
that. See, I think she did get that. I think she had that completely because of, with, like, just even with the accent and with, like, certain phrases she would say. I just think she played it in a different way that Lena Green played it.
Yeah.
Originally. Like, it's two different interpretations of the same character.
Ellen Green. Yeah.
Ellen Green, sorry.
Yeah.
Because, like, I think Ellen Green was, like, a little more meek, a little more, like... kind of scared of, and that's how she chose to play it. And with Butler, I think that she played it more, like, insecure. Like, here's this beautiful woman, but she's so insecure.
Yeah, but I think Ellen had this whole, like, I do think she had the insecurity and the meekness and all these things, and, like, she's really making fun of those like, heroines that, like, always go with the bad boys and, like, are always, like, kind of, like, dingy. And I feel like you have to, if you're going to make fun of that, you have to really hit it home. Like, it has to be clear that you're making fun of it. And that's the thing I like about her.
Mm. Maybe that was just a choice she made not to make fun of that and just to go in a different direction.
Yeah. I mean, and that's like everybody has a different taste. Everybody has a different viewpoint. You know, like there are tons of actors for tons of roles that like fit everybody's different needs for what they choose as their best enjoyable performance.
So also with the Tony Awards, the 2003, with how good I believe it was and how well it did and how people like still like want to have a revival and watch it, it didn't really get nominated for any Tonys. Hunter got nominated for leading actor. That was it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have a clip for you guys because it wasn't nominated for best revival, which it fell in the revival category, even though the original was never on Broadway. But because of the movie and everything, they felt that it should go in the revival category.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, this show has, they've used it in so many things besides it becoming a movie. And I do have a couple clips that we're going to show. So we have the, I think, most notable one, which is the Family Guy.
I actually haven't
You've
seen...
You've never seen this?
You know what's funny is I have seen a lot of Family Guy, but I've never
seen
this.
This is Herbert from Family Guy, and it's just him re-singing somewhere that's green to Chris being Seymour in this.
Oh, gosh. Herbert the Perverted Neighbor.
The best part about this to me is that they just literally re-sing the song. They didn't change it because they didn't need to.
He's dressed like Audrey.
Yep.
It's funny because it looks like the house from the movie.
Well, that's what they're doing. They're just doing the entire movie thing.
Yeah.
But that's the whole thing, is that they didn't have to change anything because the song is so ridiculous if you think about the... Just, like, how they'd, like, play with it.
Yeah.
But they didn't have to change anything to make it more comedic. They just put a cartoon to him and have Herbert singing it. Also, if you guys were unaware, which I had totally forgotten about this, and then I watched this, and I was like, oh, you know what? I kind of remember this. There was a cartoon in the early 90s made off of Little Shop of Horrors. Yep. We're going to play the intro. It was such a ridiculous cartoon, but this is the intro theme song to that.
This must be the firehouse.
Which his voice reminds me of Charlie Brown.
It isn't supposed to float. It's supposed to carry the Fire Queen and her court in the Tournament of Hoses Parade.
So this is actually a little bit into the movie. I thought I'd put it from the beginning where they sing the intro song.
Give me a second, I'll fix it.
Sorry, Mark.
It's okay. I love how something with such a, like, terrifying dark humor ending, they're like, let's remake this for kids.
Right. But don't the kids sound like Charlie Brown?
They all sound like the Charlie Brown kids.
Right? Yeah. It's like they took Charlie Brown kids and put it in with a plant. And then, of course, in this show, the plant doesn't eat people. It eats food. Because you can't
because,
have a plant for kids.
Because we've got to make this a G-rated plant.
We can't have children watching.
The whole thing, though, that's so amusing about the musical is that the plant eats people. And that,
well, I think,
like,
there was a reason the cartoon didn't succeed.
Yeah. It's not like Beetlejuice, where you can kind of, I guess, make it. Oh, jeez.
It's so great. In such a terrible way. Wait, you have to wait for the plant to, like, wrap.
All right, it's time for me to bust a rhyme, so sit back and chill for a while. I'm coming at ya like Toon style, so get ready for a funny bone overload at the Little Shop. Yeah,
a funny bone overload. Can't make this up. The Little Shop posse
is gaining respect. This was a real thing. Put you in jail. Now
when you come to the shop. This is in the 90s, right?
Yeah.
The 90s, like, were 91. Such a special time.
And then it's Mr. Mushnick, and it's Mr. Mushnick's daughter with Seymour.
Dear God, can I stop it?
Yeah, it's pretty special.
It. I'm sorry, I just had to show it because when I was looking stuff up for this, I saw that and I was like, wait, there's a cartoon? And then I played it and I was like, why? I kind of remember this. I feel like I may have watched this at one point.
I miss this because I was living in Germany at the time, so we did not have this.
You did not have this amazing cartoon over there.
Yes. I read about it, but until now I've not seen the beauty of it.
Samantha says, oh my God, I cannot believe that was a real show. I'm dead. It was amazing, people. I know, in the worst way.
We had the Beetlejuice cartoon, which is infinitely better.
Well, yeah, I mean, that one succeeded.
I would love to see Beetlejuice as a musical.
This did not succeed.
Can we all say that I would love to see
that
Beetlejuice
would be a good musical. Let's make that a musical, people. Broadway people that have pull.
Alan Menken should write it.
Alan Menken, get
Here
on that
go.
Score.
Here we go. I'm just spinning.
All right, so let's just go, I think, to what do we prefer? What do you prefer, the original? I mean, I don't know if you've actually listened to the soundtrack or the revival.
I have. I've listened to the soundtrack. You know, I do miss, because when the movie cut out a lot of songs, and there are some songs that, like, Mr. Mushnick sings with Seymour, and I couldn't care less, you know? I'm just like, whatever. But I do miss, they cut out that song in the movie between the dentist and Seymour.
The Laughing Gas one?
Yeah, the Laughing Gas song. I actually really like the Laughing Gas song. It's called Now It's Just the Gas. Little things like that are kind of a bummer for me, but I still prefer the movie with the...
So you're talking movie for yourself.
Yeah.
I was going original versus revival of the show.
Oh, of the show? Original.
But you can say that because you won't be here next week.
Yeah, but then ultimately I prefer the movie, but I prefer it with the director's cut ending, which is the ending where everybody dies versus
the happier ending.
Versus the happier ending.
I'll save my movie versus play for next week when we're discussing it. Unfortunately, Jackie won't be here for that. But for me, I like the revival over the original cast. And if you listen to both soundtracks, you can let us know what you guys think, too. Is there anything else you wanted to talk about with this show?
No, that's it. I mean, I love... You know what's... You know what? I know that people sometimes have a hard time going to a musical and seeing an ending that is
not
depressing, you know, but I actually really love this ending. And I really love the idea of, I guess in the original one, they had it more of like the plants were out attacking the audience.
In the one I saw, when they say in even this theater, and I think this may depend on what theater you've seen and if they can make it work, but they had tendrils drop from the ceiling around us.
I saw it in a community theater. Let me tell you, they did not have that capability. But I do like that idea. I like the idea that these people have done so heinously wrong. And they've all done, except for our Audrey, they've all pretty much done terrible
things. I mean, we don't
know.
Audrey alludes to her past that she deserves all this. We don't know what that is. They never go into it. I wonder if, I haven't watched the original film and I kind of want to. Maybe they talk about it in there.
Right.
If they do, I'll let you guys know next week.
It has Jack Nicholson in a really small part.
Fun
facts.
Yeah.
Fun facts.
I don't know. All my favorite musicals are depressing endings where a lot of people die.
I know, yeah. Like, I'm thinking, Les Mis, Cabaret.
Sweeney Todd. Like, all these musicals I love are depressing. And everyone dies.
But this one is depressing funny.
Yeah.
It's depressing
funny.
It's
very comedical.
It's a comedical depressing. Comedical.
That's my new word. I made it up
right now. Comedical is depressing.
Comical, sorry.
Comical.
But it's a really fun show. If you ever get the chance to see it, even if it's community theater, a lot of community theaters do this. A lot of high schools do this. Go see it. It's fun. It's just a really fun time.
It is a really good time.
And all right, so that's our Broadway breakdown for this week. Make sure you guys subscribe
to us.
Next
week is the movie.
It's the movie next week. Make sure you subscribe to us. We have a Facebook page. We have a Twitter, Broadway B-Down. Also, we're on SoundCloud, iTunes. Go there, rate, subscribe, comment. If you leave comments, we might bring them up on our show. And make sure you hit that little like button below. As always, you can find me, Brianna Phipps, BPhipps14. And Jackie?
123 Jackie B on all platforms, and JackieB123 on Instagram. And I'm doing the after show for Drag Race in a couple hours.
All right, guys. We'll see you next week. Have a good week.
For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network. The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only. They do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.